Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you want to holler, howdy-ho. From your friends at Tivoli Brewing Company and the Department of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at MSU Denver, this is Unfiltered. And here are your hosts, Jay Schrader and Dr. Samuel Jay.
Me and him and this other fool decide that we'll drink up what's left.
Jay, how you feeling?
Oh, I feel like garbage.
You sound like garbage.
Yeah.
Before we get this week's show up and running, let's give a quick shout out to who?
Jeremy Picker with Pub and Grub Creative. Jeremy and his wife have a creative studio here in town over near the light rail station at Broadway and Evans, and they do t-shirts, hats, stickers, the whole nine yards.
Some pretty cool stuff, actually.
And some great stuff, yeah.
Even if you're not in Denver, it looks like if you go to pubandgrubcreative.com, all the contact information you need is there. We'll kind of read it to you again before we get off here. But yeah, I mean, if you're in the brewery space, I think, and you want to make some shirts, their shit's pretty cool.
Yeah. Jeremy sent over a box of swag for me and the doctor here, and Tanya as well. Sporting some nice Colorado gear, but the stuff specifically for the Unfiltered guys was beer related. Some drink local, do good t-shirts. I got a great hat. Sam didn't get a hat because he looks better in the t-shirts than I do. So
got some stickers and got a pint glass.
Yeah, pint glass stickers. So Jeremy, we appreciate the love. Thanks for sending us some swag.
Pub and Grub Creative. Find them on Facebook. Find them on Instagram. Go to their website. Great products. Really cool stuff.
Yeah, they're soft. They're comfy. They look good. And let me just point out, too, that Pub and Grub Creative has a storefront at 2140 South Delaware Street. They're in the ground floor of the apartment building over there, right around the corner from Declaration Brewing, maybe 100 feet from the light rail stop. And they've got some great stuff, so check them out.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you want to holler, howdy-ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know.
A little bit of feedback, but right, weren't we having a problem with that last week? It wasn't my beard. My beard's not fluffy enough.
Oh yeah, that's
mine's
right.
It was very bronze. Soft.
Yeah, yours is good.
All right, you do the intro today.
I can do that. Unscripted and unfiltered. Dr. Samuel Jay Schrader, and
Jay Johnson,
co-owner, founding member, Bear Creek Distillery. Jay Johnson, one of the Jays here today. We're going to confuse the hell out of our listeners. Where are we? What's Bear Creek?
Bear Creek, this is a byproduct of a lifelong friendship with my founding partners and myself. We grew up, went to junior high and high school together at Bear Creek High School in Lakewood. Over many a beer drinking session, we decided that we were done being adults and wanted to try something new. So I used to own a pest control company. Okay. I sold that, and now I'm poisoning on a different level.
We like this poison better.
A more pleasurable level.
Was one of the guys a firefighter in a previous life?
You know,
or is that just a prop?
That's another one of those Easter eggs. That's actually the nozzle hose from a brewery from a long time ago.
I kind of wondered, actually, because, I mean, they basically, the parts are somewhat interchangeable.
Yeah.
So we're sitting here in Jay Johnson's, not to be confused with a saloon, but right here in the tap room at Bear Creek Distillery, which, if you haven't been down, top notch. Denver, Colorado, 80223.
1879.
Earth, United States Earth. You're 1879, yeah. I only know the zip code because I was, for 8 or 9 years, just a short stumble from this very place, which was nice. There's no booze in my neighborhood now, that's for sure.
Okay, Jay Johnson, you gave us a quick walkthrough of the history. Can you do that again?
Sure. So we bought this building in 2012. The neighborhood has certainly grown up around us. We used to actually have the buddy method when we took the trash outside.
I bet.
Because we'd have to step over. And I didn't show you guys, but the day we closed on our building, some, I always like to say, housing challenged Denver residents threw a party back there and lit a couch on fire.
Oh, nice. Wow.
So we got a call the very first day we owned this place. Your building's on fire. So
Was it really on fire?
It was on fire. Oh, like our whole, I'll show you guys, but we have an awning back there, if you will.
Okay.
And all the lumber on that burned, all the rubber from the garage door burned down too. So, but now it's yoga pants and baby strollers walking down the street. So we've managed to grow up around that, but we've been really well received by the people that live in Platte Park, Inglewood,
okay.
Barnum, Ruby Hill.
Yeah,
we get a fair amount of traffic from the DU area as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we had no idea what we were doing, essentially. It took us a while to get through our permitting process, and that allowed Jeff, our head distiller, and myself to... Well, essentially, we traveled around all the distilleries in Colorado. Jeff had gone out to Peach Street, and he was sort of the catalyst as, like, this being an idea of something that we could do.
Okay.
And that year, 2012, was ADI was in Denver, which is the American Distilling Institute.
Okay.
Actually, it may have been 2013. That was a lot of whiskey ago, so it's hard to keep that stuff straight. But we went and did that, too, and... I went to North Carolina, Jeff went to Wisconsin, and we sort of got to pick and choose what we thought were really cool elements of distilleries. Mm-hmm. And what became evident to us relatively quickly was the fact that people took their tasting rooms as a secondary issue.
Uh-huh.
Like we went to places like literally had this beautiful distillery and, you know, they want you to taste their booze at like in folding chairs and plastic tables.
Right.
And we knew right away that that wasn't going to work for us. So, we want this place to really come across as an experience. So we designed this amazing tasting room to have people to be able to enjoy our product. And I mean, not to slap myself on the back too hard, but I really feel like we were some of the first people that paid a lot of attention to their tasting room in Denver. And now you see anybody that opens, like the Block Distilling Company's tasting room's gorgeous. Rocker down in Littleton did a great job.
Is that something you have to do in Denver, is to really focus on the tap room or the tasting room, excuse me?
You know, I'd say 8-10 years ago, no. But, I mean, we're a top 5 cosmopolitan city in the United States. You know, we're a destination city. And people are used to not necessarily a dog and pony show, but the longtime residents of Denver, I feel like they recognize authenticity. And they know, like, they're like, oh, you're local guys. You've been here a long time. But at the same time, you have to sort of cater to a lot of the new residents of Denver that expect something high-end if they're coming from L.A. or New York or even Chicago.
Do you think the craft beer and brewing industry kind of fed into that? I mean, you guys, I don't want to say you're late in the game, but brewery tap rooms were all the rage, I'd say, in, 2000? Really, the takeoff was 2012, 2013 also, and that was where you started to see a more inviting environment, a more family-friendly, casual atmosphere, but done with a high-end polish or, you know, a place that you wouldn't be embarrassed to take your kids. No buddy method to taste a beer or, in this case, a whiskey.
No, I mean, I definitely think that's a fair statement. You know, in Colorado, and Coloradans in general have always supported their own. And, you know, it's amazing. You keep waiting to see this craft beer thing die out, right? But every time you go drive next a new tap room, they're full.
Yeah.
You know, I live down south, and there's one that opened up by us called, it was supposed to be called Off Leash Ales.
Okay.
And they were going to incorporate like a dog run in the brewery.
Oh.
But that didn't work out. But there's...
Yeah, the city shit all over that.
They certainly did.
Like they were behind the curve, 2+ years?
2+, easy.
Because Littleton just could not get their heads wrapped around it. I just had this conversation at a Christmas party with a buddy on Friday.
Yeah.
Blown away that these guys actually made it.
I'd met them 3 years ago, and I point blank told them, I go, this is never gonna happen. And they fought through the red tape and were able to manipulate their business plan, and there's still a dog element to it. But that place is packed every night, you know, and it's cool. I mean, I'm sort of in a bar desert down there in that part of Littleton. There's really not anywhere, you know, minus going into downtown Littleton.
Come on, Chatfield Escape.
Oh, buddy. That's the Lucky Mutt now.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
It's closed.
What about, is the North Shore still over there?
Yes.
The North Shore is a legit dive bar.
Oh, without a doubt.
What is it? The Mirage?
Mirage is there. They have added a creepier element, if possible, by adding off-track betting.
We're taking this thing on the road, baby. I've never set foot in the Mirage. I don't even like the 7-Eleven that's next door to the Mirage.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to hand the mic back over to Sam, my technical director.
Somebody's got to run this interview. Okay, so you got the place, right? You set it up. When did you buy it? When did you? 12.
12. 12, 12, 12 is our date of incorporation.
Okay. And then when could the public come in here and grab it?
So we originally were going to have a little tiny tasting bar, and then this big build-out sort of came from that. We opened November of 2014 with Silver Rum and Rye Vodka. And we had 10 to 12 cocktails on the cocktail menu. Now we're up to 50 plus, depending on what's in season. And we were open Saturday nights. And then we added Thursday. So we were open Thursdays and Saturdays. And then we were open Fridays. But mind you, at the time, it was just Jeff, Debo, and myself. Mm-hmm. Debo's our operations manager. I'm kind of the outside of the distillery guy. And Jeff, he makes all the juice. So we were maintaining this place, bartending three nights a week. Jeff was distilling. I was out selling. So for the first year and a half, it was essentially just us three with some people peppered in. So I literally would come home when I got a chance to come home, and it'd be like, oh, my God, my kid just grew 2 inches.
That's crazy.
You know, the first couple of years, I've never worked harder, but I've never done something more satisfying. I mean, it was just grind, grind, grind. And now we have people that do a lot of the things that we used to do, which allow us to concentrate on bigger, better things.
So we don't get a chance very often on the show to talk about people who have had to grind and hustle to build this thing. I guess, I mean, Ratio, right? Jason over at Ratio for sure. But I mean, having Tivoli, right? That's an established brand. So what is it, in your opinion, the three of you, that made this thing happen?
Well,
I
would say
you've had, I mean, clearly
camaraderie between the three of us, certainly.
Yeah.
You know, I'd do anything for those guys, and I feel like they'd do anything for me as well. And I just think people, you know, and I think I've already said this, but people recognize when you're genuine, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot to be said, and we still are self-distributed when, you get that personal touch from an owner instead of just some random sales rep for one of the larger distribution houses.
For sure.
And so we've always been this welcoming grassroots sort of organization because that's who we are, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that grind really paid off. I mean, we don't advertise. Of course, we utilize social media because, I mean, print advertising and some radio advertising is nearly dead. No offense.
I'm a social media guy. Trust me.
You know, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it's just that daily grind. I mean, we're at farmers markets. We are at events. We're out in the streets all the time. I mean, I set up a pop-up cocktail bar at Nordstrom's last Sunday.
Okay. You know? That's crazy.
For like four hours.
Inside Nordstrom?
Inside Nordstrom's.
Genius fucking idea.
Yeah, they had a trunk show, which I don't know what that means, but
the guy wanted
whiskey there.
Okay.
And so I did an old fashioned and a bourbon sweet tea and sold like 75 cocktails.
How many bottles did you sell off that trunk show?
You know, that's a different sort of permitting. Like they have their own liquor license, so I could operate under that. But if we have like a satellite location, distilleries are allowed one additional temporary tasting room.
Okay.
So breweries have five or six, I'm not sure. So what we can do on Sundays is I have a permitted tent on South Pearl Street where we sell bottles.
Excellent.
So there's some legislation that we're trying to push through with the Distillers Guild here in Colorado. We have the largest Distillers Guild in the entire country. And I sat on the committee to launch the Colorado Spirits Trail, which is another conversation that could probably take us all day, but
we'll essentially come back to that for another interview.
So,
by the way, we take notes on these interviews because every time we start a conversation, it doesn't go where it's supposed to, and B, it gives us five more ideas for the next show. So free form. By the way, we used to also have three mics, but something happened there.
Anyhow, sorry.
No, and so just to surmise what you were saying about what it takes to grind. I mean, it's a full life commitment, you know. And I have three daughters who have always played competitive sports. So there was a good chunk of 2 years where I didn't see any softball, I didn't see any hockey, yeah. I didn't see any lacrosse. And my wife, God love her, she picked up the slack and mm-hmm. was able to take care of everything at home so that I could grind. And then my business partners are the same, you know. Even Debo, I'd like to see him go home more often. You know, that guy's here 70, 80 hours a week. Mm-hmm. So it's still, even though we have the help, it's such a passion project that we're still always here making sure that, you know, we're putting our own touches on everything.
So, I mean, you're the first interview where somebody's really brought up social media from a perspective that is intelligent. And so I've got to ask, what role has it played in you not just building this brand, but keeping it going? I mean, your social media is fantastic.
Oh, thank you. So, I certainly cannot take any credit for that. Okay. Again, that's Debo. That's probably why he's here 80 hours a week.
Okay.
It's a truly valuable tool. I mean, if you want a younger demographic, mm-hmm. and to be honest, 18 to 34 in the liquor business, that's your wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that you're definitely catering to.
Right.
And they're not opening the newspaper. They're not, you know, opening Thirst magazine. They're looking on Instagram. They're looking on, and not even so much Facebook anymore, Twitter. Yeah. You know, that stuff's huge. And it's, the thing about social media, you can have okay social media and you could have great social media, but you can have really bad social media. And you see that a lot.
We experience it on a regular basis, so it certainly doesn't hurt either, in my opinion. I'm not the professor. You guys have some pretty good brand identity in terms of your logo, your design. We even were talking a little bit about bottles earlier, but you can have great marketing and have a shitty product. It sounds to me like you guys have kind of hit the trifecta there with a good marketing identity or brand identity, a hell of a product, and then roll it up with Debo kicking ass on the social media side.
Right.
That's huge.
Well, and I have a lot of people, colleagues from other distilleries are like, well, who do you guys use for your social media? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you guys have to be using someone. I'm like, no, we do it all in-house. And they're like, no, you don't. And I'm like, yeah, we do. You know? But it's a full, I mean, you know, yeah, it's a full-time job, or can be.
That's impressive to hear that you guys do it all. That's impressive to hear that you guys do it all in-house.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's what people, the game, it changes the content game in the sense that you don't have to have that 30-second, you know, let's say $30,000 ad that you put money into, right? You can instead do the four posts a day, right, or the scheduled posts and use the right hashtags, and people just want to see you document what you do. And I think that's the beauty of not just, you know, the distillery, but just any craft beverage business is people want to see what happens behind closed doors. And the tour that you took us on was just fantastic. And the most interesting part of my day thus far, certainly it's not seeing Jay again, but
yeah, there's more to come on that. But I think part of that too is when you're telling a true story, yeah. I mean, and yeah. Jay Johnson actually spoke to the story, right? We all talked about this a little bit pre-interview, but when there's actually an organic story that it started someplace and you went through the trials and tribulations and then happily ever after, right? The social media presence for somebody that doesn't have a story is going to look forced and fake. And for you guys, it probably comes a lot more naturally because you've lived it and you're doing it all day, every day, which I think is huge. I think we hear a lot about the story. People want to hear a story, right? But when the story's genuine, which it sounds to me like everything coming out of this guy's mouth so far is pretty accurate and true, that's what really makes the difference.
Yeah, it's you got to have all the pieces have to fit in the puzzle. You know, I'm going to probably piss a lot of people off here, but, you know, this Pappy Van Winkle monster that's been created over the last 5 years.
My God.
You know, it's good. I think a Weller 12 is just as good as any Pappy. You know, you've got these people paying so much money for these mm-hmm. bottles. Mm-hmm. I like to tell a story that I used to be a bar manager at a bar downtown, and I had a case of Pappy 25 year. Mm-hmm. You know, this is in the late 90s.
Okay.
That I counted the same 12 bottles every single month. And, you know, had I been a prognosticator back then, you know, a fortune teller, I would have been like, shit, I snatch a couple of these up. Yeah, this will help, you know, pay for a half a semester of college.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's story.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. So many, and I was sort of mentioning it to you earlier in the back, Colorado's always been right up there in the nation with being genuine grain to glass distilleries.
Okay.
You know, shout out to Peach Street, shout out to Stranahan's, mm-hmm. shout out to Al down at Law's Whiskey House. You know, so we had this core group of guys that were really committed, guys and gals, I should say, committed to creating great whiskey here in Colorado. And unfortunately, you're starting to see a lot more folks come to the game sourcing their booze. And it sort of dilutes the quality overall, in my opinion. Not necessarily quality. I guess the point I'm trying to make is story, mm-hmm. because you get a lot of these stories about, you know, my granddad was a distiller in the hills of Colorado. No, he wasn't. Shut up. You know? Or I've been doing this. No, you haven't.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen people make a few shekels in this business, and you're like, all right, we can do this.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a lot of us that, like I mentioned, the grind, you know, and genuine quality and people that, in my opinion, and not casting aspersions on other people's business models, that are doing it the right way.
What is, okay, so these changes, right, in which people are maybe trucking in their beverage, slapping a label on it, are you worried about it? In terms of how it could affect your brand, but also that, you know, your buddies over at Stranahan, saying, like, is this a conversation that everybody who's kind of a Colorado, you know, distiller, you guys are having?
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's right now, it's kind of a scary time for beer and liquor producers, liquor store owners. You know, you've got a lot of different things going on. I mean, January 1, you can have full strength beer in all grocery stores. And after that, you know, I think the way the law read is you can own up to 5 liquor licenses now, and then by 2027, it's going to be unlimited.
Oh, man.
So you've got huge national chain stores that are moving in.
Yeah.
And then you've got Kroger and Safeway. So what I'm trying to get to is it's a weird time, you know, and if you don't have a distributor that is – doesn't play ball with the big guys. Excuse me one second. Yeah. How you doing, man?
Good.
Good.
Oh, that's right.
You're good. You're good. You're fine.
Yeah. No, he's good. Oh. Yep, we're good. Sorry, guys.
No, you're fine.
This it's a working distillery.
Jay Johnson is grinding right now.
I'm grinding.
This is only the third time we've seen somebody come into this place today.
Today.
That Jay's had to deal with. So.
Spinning plates. So, I guess a liquor store is a grocery store. They're going to, you know, they buy from big bulk producers on the food side. And they're going to deal with Southern Wine and Spirits. They're going to deal with National. They're going to deal with Republic. They're going to deal with Breakthrough. So a guy like me, self-distributed, this is a little tenuous time because you've got these sort of craft-oriented liquor stores now. And some of the big guys, like, we great relationships with Davidson's and Molly's and Hazel's and, you know, Pearl Wine Company. We've just got a lot of really great partnerships in place, but there's a danger of those guys going away. You know, where you can buy a pallet of Jameson for a quarter of what I can get, you know, sell to you for just, anyway, it's a scary time. So yes, if you can come to market with a product that is less expensive to make and can sell it at a lower price point than I can provide, or any of the other guys that I mentioned can provide, of course that's gonna be a scary thing.
But that's why brand is so important, right?
I mean, right.
To be able to stand out, to have somebody have an affinity for or an emotional connection to your brand when they go into that massive store, I can totally see why why it's important for you guys to stand out, or even Shanahan's, right? Yeah,
right.
Shanahan's, sorry.
And then, you know, and I really feel like that's why we had the advantage as well. I feel like we do have the advantage because we're 4 years ahead of that, yeah. You know, 4 years ahead of that crescendo or that crashing wave, because we have been doing the brand building and we have been making our product, you know? So it's going to be a lot more competitive one way or the other.
Would you guys even be up for or able to respond to a Kroger request at this point? I mean, you've got a lot of production, you got a lot of aging going on in the back. Would you A, have the capability to do something like that, and B, would you even want to?
Right. So, I mean, that is just a tricky little question there, Jay. So yes, we would have the ability to. We could even go, say, nationwide for like Total Wine or Kroger.
Okay.
But that would be Silver Rum and both vodkas.
Okay.
Right? So our mantra here has always been measured growth. So the key is to be able to forecast with what your, you know, the barrels you have that are going to be ready 2 years from now, how much of that you're going
to
have.
I mean, I'm sorry, I gotta cut you off. Do you have to deal with that more than a brewery does? I mean, you would assume like forecasting has to play a major part.
Huge. Yeah. It's like start to finish, you know, on some of our whiskeys is 4 years.
Jeez.
So 4 years ago, we're trying to think where we're going to be now when we're a brand new company, three guys sitting in here at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night staring at each other, you know? So it's been this sort of measured growth.
Yeah.
You know, and I certainly won't point anybody out in particular, but I know of two or three distilleries now that essentially have overextended themselves to some nationwide distribution, and they aren't going to have some of their SKUs for 9 months from now.
Oh, damn.
You know?
Okay.
And the one thing too, when we were talking about breweries earlier, one of the reasons I kind of stopped frequenting a lot of brew pubs, and I wish them all the best, but like I'll go somewhere and find a favorite beer, and then the next time, two times you go in there, they don't have that mm-hmm. beer.
Yeah.
And it's just so frustrating, you know, when you're like your best product, you can't keep it in stock.
We talk a lot about that where, you know, there are some breweries that maybe go a little too crazy and go the shotgun approach. And as soon as you find something you like, they can't make it anymore or they won't do it again. It was a one-off. Or in the case of a certain brewery that we're at just last week, head brewer's gone, somebody's different, nobody liked that guy's recipes. But what I'm hearing here then is one of the key things is consistency and a high quality product. Now, that being said, it's, I think, in my opinion at least, a good opportunity to move this conversation a little bit differently. There are a lot of different bottles on the wall here.
Yeah.
Not to lump you in with the shotgun approach, and this is, I'm going to drop a little bit of my own knowledge here. As I understand it, vodka, fastest to distill, least amount of time. And a lot of guys start there while their bourbons and their rums and their whiskeys are aging. Is that right?
That's partly true.
Okay.
So rum is actually the easiest thing to make.
Rum, not
sugar's
vodka.
Super easy to work with. Easy cleanup. You know, we can turn around a batch of rum in about a week. Vodka actually is probably the most difficult to distill. Because you need to get that baby up to 190 proof when it comes off the still. So you have to use every one of those plates we talked about back there on the rectifying column. So Jeff will do a stripping run of vodka. He can push that through hard and fast in about 9 to 10 hours.
Okay.
And what he'll do is he'll do three stripping runs and take each of those batches and put it in what's called a finishing run or the spirit run. And he'll put all those into the pot, and it takes about 18 to 24 hours to run that through. So, yes, I just wanted to clarify that. But, yeah, so a lot of people will do that, and if they had the same business model that we did, in between those spirit runs, we'll start filling whiskey barrels and set those back there. The reason you're seeing all of those 10 bottles up there is we have a wholesale and manufacturing license. So that allows us to make cocktails with only spirits that we produce. So we wanted to be able to give a pretty broad cocktail. We have a really high level of cocktail mixology here, and we wanted to be able to create pretty much anything you'd find in an operating cocktail bar.
And the menu, as Jay said earlier, 50 plus at any given time. I've sampled my fair share of the cocktails here and never once had a bad one. But I think tasting room, distillery, you could go down the road a little bit and they maybe have five or six options on the menu and one or two seasonals. I'm staring at, I think, 20 to 25 right now, the end of the 2018 December. But watching you guys make these cocktails too, you've got some amazing bartenders back there. So tell
best
me
in Denver.
Best in there, Bear Creek Distillery, best bartenders and mixologists in Denver, which I didn't even know was a thing 10 years ago, but a mixologist is actually critical, I think, to that 4-year plan 4 years ago.
Exactly.
Now, that all being said, we've got some ryes, we've got some wheats. Give us at least some broad strokes on the different ingredients and the different okay. flavors. Actually, we'll pause because your ice guy looks like he needs a signature.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we're good. If you remember that, 2830. Yeah, this place is cool, man. This is, I was just telling Jay, this place is cool. You're a hell of a guest, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, they're very chill. This is awesome. Okay, sorry, we were talking about.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the, you've got a couple of different ingredient options.
Sure.
That are bottled up here.
You know, and I mentioned that none of us were classically trained in. We're not beholden to a spirit type or spirit style, which is at first I thought was going to be a little bit of a handicap for us, but it's been really liberating because we can try things people haven't done.
Nice.
Like our two dedicated mash bill whiskeys, we have 100% wheat whiskey and 100% rye. Wow. You don't generally find 100% rye, but to find 100% wheat whiskey is almost like a unicorn. And even to find a wheat whiskey, Al Laws makes one. And we did a six distillery collaboration where everybody made it a wheat whiskey. But we based that one off of Dry Fly out of Washington, their wheat. So we do some quirky things. Like that wheat is a really fun, approachable whiskey. And I think somebody's drinking that around here. And then to match that with our vodkas, we do 100% wheat vodka and 100% rye. So that rye actually reminds you a little bit of a rye whiskey. It has some flavor. So a lot of people have been longtime vodka drinkers are a little bit put off by that one. But most vodkas, if they're not all potato, like Woody Creek is a potato vodka. Mm-hmm. Woody Creek makes great vodka. And then corn, Tito's is all corn.
Okay.
Generally, vodka has been a grain blend. Wheat, rye, millet, oat, you know, there's some different things in there. It really depended on what the plentiful crop was, you know, where you lived in Eastern Europe. So we just sort of focused those flavors with the wheat and the rye. And then we do a house-infused spice rum that's been going crazy for us. It's more of a fall spice. It's not a sweet rum. It's more of a savory pumpkin spice flavored sort of.
That's Tanya Schrader's favorite. We've gone through a couple bottles of that at our house. I've never even brought her into the bar, for crying out loud. That's... I guess shame on me.
So, and then I'll get you some free drink tickets. That'll help. All right, you can bring her in here.
There you go.
My wife steals free drink tickets out of my wallet all the time.
And then, 5 years ago when this idea was hatched. Six. It's almost 7 years. Wow.
Almost seven.
We always set out to make bourbon.
Okay.
So our keystone product is our straight bourbon, which is corn, rye, and malted barley. And then we also do a wheated bourbon, just something a little bit different. But it's we've always gone for a little bit different flavor. Yeah. But, you know, with our equipment, we have high-quality equipment. We have high-quality ingredients. We have high-quality people running that equipment. And the end result, I think, is the calling card of all of our spirits are very smooth, very drinkable spirits.
Yeah, that is. Okay, we've been here 30 minutes. I feel bad. Don't want me to take your time from your family.
Oh, you're fine. I'm working. They're home.
Next steps. What's going on now? What's the plan? What's the next 5-year plan?
Next 5-year plan. So that, the rule of thumb, and I mentioned this on the radio not long ago, and no one had ever heard that, but year 5 is like a pivotal year, right? That's when distillers really can make things happen and move the needle.
Okay.
We've seen.
Why is that? Just because
you're established, you've got product, you know. But if you've made it to year five, you've figured some shit out, you know. So year five for us is really, we've had tremendous growth up until now. You know, we're in close to 400 accounts statewide.
That's awesome.
We push up into Montana a little bit and a little bit in Wyoming, and that keeps us really busy. And you know, so the next 5 years, of course, I'd like to do some distribution out of state. Our goal is to become Colorado's go-to craft brand across all categories.
That's awesome.
You know, so we're looking at doing some things that are going to really get people to grab those bottles off the shelf as their everyday drinker. And we've seen some explosive numbers in silver rum, you know. There's not really, I mean, Montana makes a rum, and then you have some smaller guys that are making rum. But we produce three SKUs in the rum category.
Okay.
And that's been doing really well for us. So just we're going to keep pushing. We're looking at expanding our sales staff in Q1, maybe into Q2 of next year. So that'll give us four dedicated salesmen. Right now we have one guy that pretty much does central Denver and pushes into the mountains a little bit. We have a guy up north and then a guy from Alameda South.
Okay.
And so that Alameda South into southern Colorado will go to a new guy, and then this guy will get a different. But we're going to hold on to self-distribution as long as we can.
So do you see, like, towns, cities, not just in the Mountain West, but maybe the Midwest, where you're like, oh, like, we could, you know, we could be the name in distilled spirits? Like,
certainly. Yeah. And, you know, on a micro level, like, we went down to Pueblo.
Okay.
Like, 3 months ago. And for whatever reason, people ignore Pueblo. You know, there's not really a lot of brewery things going on down there. There's a handful of things. Brews Ale House just opened up down there. Killer spot if you're ever down in Pueblo. And we've gone haywire in Pueblo because no one's taken the time to go down and pay attention to those guys. So I think if we could sort of take that same mindset and mentality and go to, say, Omaha or Lincoln, you know, central Iowa for sure, and give them that same sort of attention, you know, because you're going to get swallowed up in Chicago and New York, and you know, LA is just a horrible market to work in from everything I've heard about it. So, you know, sort of keeping that local grassroots approach, that Midwesterner, Western sort of feel, maybe down into Phoenix, you know, and pay some attention. I certainly think we could do some big things in mid-level cities.
Strategic, I think, is what you're talking about here a little bit.
Measured
growth, which is the mantra, as Jay put it. Not major cities, middle-sized cities.
I think we'd be better in middle-sized cities, you know, where there's something to be said for people when they feel like they're underappreciated, you know? Like, let's go into Cleveland and show Cleveland some love, you know?
Yeah, I can tell you that Omaha is blowing up. I mean, it's Denver 10, 15 years ago. And the funny thing is, if you pick the right strategic cities, Iowa City, Omaha, I mean, anything that catches on in Omaha, those people are going to be leaving and going to Chicago or Denver anyway in a couple of years. So let somebody carry that brand for you down the road. And that's huge. Phoenix, Arizona, anything going on down there is gigantic as well. Puebs, shout out to Puebs. A good buddy of mine spends way more time in Pueblo than he should. But it is. It's another
Pueblo
city.
Parties, dude.
Pueblo's a funny city, right? Yeah. Like, there's a lot going on down there. Just nobody talks about it. Nobody knows about it.
And it's just like, we could take this tangent totally the wrong way. But, you mean, it's a city that probably has some of the deepest, richest culture in all of Colorado. I mean, you had steel mills. You had the mob. You had...
Yeah, the mob. That my buddy's long, long Italian roots in Pueblo. It blows my mind. And the construction and the history of the buildings down there, I mean, it is a cool, cool town.
Yeah, agreed.
I think tangent is always the hashtag for all these conversations, at least when Sam gives me the mic.
No, that's perfect. That's you guys. I've driven through Pueblo, but never stopped for a beverage. So now the next time I go through there. No, you were saying something, Jay Johnson, that made a lot of sense to me because I was talking to a buddy of Jay Schrader's and I, Greg Goldleaf, the other day. And we were talking.
Oakleaf.
What did I say?
Oakleaf.
Yeah. We're obviously that close. no, but the kind of college town where professors don't want to be called doctors.
Right.
Like that's the kind of, to me, that's a brand right there, right? Like that's a potential client that would love this stuff. Is that right? Like, you're intelligent, you have upper middle class income, so you can spend a little extra, but it's not pretentious. It's just good quality liquor.
Right.
We know a professor like that that does not like to be called doctor, and he lives in hotbed of the booze industry, in my opinion, Michigan. So
yeah,
if you want us to send a couple bottles that way,
we could do something like that. You know, and that's the thing. Like, of course, there's paycheck whiskey. That's what we refer to it, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to be sort of that, not that paycheck whiskey,
right.
Whereas, like, all right, you might buy that 3 times a year,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas in between the paycheck and everyday drinker, we're like, all right, I feel like splurging a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I'll spend $50 on a bottle of bourbon,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of 85 or 110 or, you know.
This is like my wife and I's best friends live in St. Louis, and they're obsessed with old fashions over the last 3 years, right? This is the kind of whiskey they would go
yeah.
buy, or I could easily bring them a bottle of this and they would be extremely appreciative, just because there's something about, and I think that's the clientele that you guys are really honing in on. They like the story, right? There's something deeper to the brand. There's an authenticity to it, but it's also just a good product.
Right. Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we're in a place too, where even your 18 to 35 year old drinker, do they want a six pack of Coors Light, or they want a six pack of something a little bit better with a little bit more flavor that they've met the brewer? Okay. Same thing.
Well, that, and those, let's rewind here a little bit, right? We didn't grow up with microbrews. I mean, I remember when Sam Adams came out and I was 19 years old and Fat Tire.
Yeah.
You know, these kids have grown up with craft brands, especially here in Colorado.
Right.
You know, and they're more inclined to, like, my daughter, she, you know, her friends are of drinking age-ish. And
close enough.
Right. And, like, when I, like, we'll go to graduation parties and stuff like that. When I graduated, it was a keg of Keystone Light.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's a keg of Great Divide, you know, or something like that.
Hey, I just came from a Christmas Eve party with a keg of Molson and a keg of a gifted Grist Oktoberfest. I can tell you exactly who drank what, because there was a fine line right down the middle of the party. Everybody over the age of 40-ish
drank Coors Light,
and they couldn't even handle the flavor.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe another question then, and I'm sure at some point Sam's going to make me wrap this up. Do people recognize enough of the differences in your quality vodka product versus, say, Smirnoff, thank you. I was
right.
trying to think of a cheap plastic gallon bottle.
Hawkeye vodka is what we drink.
Hawkeye vodka.
Well, I think you just, you know, in your previous comment, answered your own question, because, like, our vodka has flavor in it, right? So
God forbid.
Yeah, which is, you know, heaven forbid you want your vodka martini to not taste like anything or, you know, have any. So people are more receptive to deeper, richer, sharper flavors even. You know, we make a white whiskey, which is essentially our bourbon distillate that is put into a barrel that doesn't have any char, just long enough so we can call it whiskey. That shit is amazing. I mean, you got deep, rich corn. You've got sharp bite of rye. You've got an interesting malty finish on it. And, you know, people are like, oh, my God, moonshine. And you're like, try this. And then they're like, oh, my God, I like that. It actually tastes like something. So I think, you know, and I'm speaking at from this in a Colorado perspective, but people are more receptive to stuff that actually has flavor to it.
Yeah. Hey, those of you that are listening to this podcast, hopefully sooner than later, if you're not in Denver or Colorado, don't be afraid to spend a few extra dollars on a six pack of beer, or $10 or $15 more on a quality bottle of rum or bourbon or vodka, because you will be fucking amazed at what you're getting out of that extra couple of dollars.
And read your labels. Make sure it says distilled and bottled by on the label. If it says produced or bottled by, although they may have done some post-production to flavor whatever product it is, that didn't mean they made it themselves.
Very important, I think, delineation there on what we're drinking. Sam J., you want to wrap us up?
Yeah, I know you're not drinking, Jay Johnson, but let's do a quick cheers, because that was fantastic. That was a great interview. Whatever you need from us, you tell us, because this was awesome.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This is whoever's listening to this, no matter where you are, make sure you get down to Acoma Street, right?
Acoma and Jewel. We're 2 blocks north of Evans and 1 block west of Broadway.
It's just the scene in here.
Bring a buddy.
Bring your wife. Bring your kids, right? I mean, you got games back there. It's
bring your kids early. It turns a little rowdy after
there's
dark.
A little blue.
Yeah. Well, we do. I mean, we have live music in here, and sometimes it's hip hop, and sometimes you might hear some colorful language. But more than that, it's a space issue. We're usually at capacity most Fridays and Saturday nights.
This place fills up fast too. So I was telling Jay Johnson that a little bit earlier. I come in when I can, as soon as I can, because if you don't have a table, come 5:15, you're in trouble. All right, Jay Johnson, thank
appreciate
you very much.
Appreciate you, fellas.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll let you know when we drop.
All right.
All right. Thanks, dude.
That's awesome.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you want to holler, hi-de-ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know?